Today's cool fact of the day is people used to think that eating cheese before bed would give them nightmares. So, in true marketing company form, the British Cheese Board decided it was bad for business. They decided to test it by giving 200 people 20 grams of cheese before bed. While no one reported nightmares, many of them did report vivid dreams, and, unsurprisingly to me anyway, the blue Stilton affected about 80% of the participants who had vivid visions, including talking animals, vegetarian crocodiles, and warrior kittens. However, the study didn't have a control, so they don't really know if those people really had those dreams normally, like vegetarian crocodile dreams, or not. One reason that the cheese made these dreams vivid is that, well, blue cheese is heavy in mold and fungus. It also contains substances like tyramine and tryptamine. These are amino acids. It's well known amongst people who study the effects of environmental mold that mold in your house will give you nightmares and strange dreams, and I've experienced that myself. I've also experienced it from eating moldy food. So not all cheese is going to cause this trouble. Most cheese is going to cause inflammation because of the effects of the casein and the poor quality dairy used. I do think it's kind of funny that someone actually did a study of cheese and dreaming to sell more cheese. Hey everyone, it's Dave Asprey, the Bulletproof Executive here on Bulletproof Radio. Today's guest is an old friend, Jack Kruse. Jack is a neurosurgeon, and I first met him at Paleo FX a few years ago. We had dinner together, and I found him to be absolutely fascinating. He's written a book about what happens when you go all out on some of these paleo ideas, including cold thermogenesis. Jack called me when he was in the middle of completing one of the most impressive cold thermogenesis experiments that I've heard about, when he was literally submerged in ice, about half of his body, before he was going in for a surgery that didn't require any painkillers afterwards because he had so incredibly changed his body to use ice. Jack's also lost more than 100 pounds using things like the paleo diet or his own version of it, which is totally worth reading about in his book. He also, of course, used a lot of cold therapy and some high-intensity interval training. Anyhow, you were just talking about what happens when our cellular energy plants, the mitochondria, don't have the ability to properly make NAD and NADPH, and that the solution to that, to sort of shortcut and summarize all that, is if you eat a high-fat diet that keeps you in a fat-burning mode, a state of ketosis most of the time, that it helps to solve that problem.
Absolutely. There's no question about it. But and the main reason is you're, you know, I always tell people it's third grade math. One mole of stearic acid or palmitic acid makes 147 ATP, and one mole of glucose makes 36. So you ask a third grader, what's better, 147 or 36? The answer is obvious. The key factor is, what does that ATP do? That's where it gets really hairy for most people, because what a biochemist believes that it does is it provides, you know, phosphate bonds for high energy bonds. That's where I completely split apart from, you know, the paleo world. I don't believe that at all. I believe that ATP has another purpose within the cell where it plays a different role, but high fat diet is absolutely critical to health. There's no question about that.
So I know we may lose some people who have stopped listening at eat more healthy fat, and that's totally cool. However, the biohackers and people who care more about how much energetic focus they have, you know, does their brain work? Do they have enough energy to get through the day? When we talk about ATP, that is the fuel that helps people have energy to get through the day and enough energy to turn their brain on even at the end of a long day. What is the other role of this that you believe it has, and what's your evidence for that?
Well, the evidence is huge, and I'm not going to go into it in detail because I got a blog coming about it, but I will give you the references to read. you need to look up a guy named Gilbert Ling and go buy his book. I think it's called Life at the Cell and Below Cell Level. In my view, he's one of the top three scientists that has never won a Nobel Prize that should. And he came up with a hypothesis called the AI hypothesis. And basically what ATP does, it donates electrons to specific parts of proteins in cells. For example, let's talk about the cell we were just mentioning, which is glutathione. When glutathione has an issue with its cysteine residues, which is one of the amino acids that's critical in glutathione, and there's not enough water bound to it, the reason that happens is ATP allows cysteine to completely unfold, meaning that it's not bent or conformed by any issue. When a protein is completely open conformation, it opens things called carbonyl groups and also amino groups that allows potassium and cell water to bind to it. When cell water binds in this fashion, it lines up in something called an anti-parallel fashion. And most people who are chemistry geeks know that water is a magnetic dipole. Well, when this happens, it allows water to become polarized. And when water becomes polarized, it becomes able to conduct electrons and protons. Just like all those fancy things that you work with Dave out in California. And basically what happens is the cell doesn't become a bag of fluid like most biochemists think it is. It actually is a liquid crystalline structure that completely conducts electrons and protons. And the more of that you do, the more energy you make. The more energy you make, the less entropy you have. And what does entropy mean when we're talking about it in this scenario? It means less. It means less chaos, less randomness. You know, there's less inflammation. And that's really what the goal is here, because the way you tell people to eat and the way I tell people to eat, if we can just get them to understand that eating fat and protein over carbohydrates is the single most important thing, they don't need to know all that stuff that I just said.
That was my next question, Jack, was like we went into some incredible detail. I'm familiar with writing about the liquid crystal nature of cells and the piezoelectric superconducting effects in different parts of the body, the superconducting around nerves and the piezoelectric effects around bones. Most people don't know that, you know, there's this big electrical side of our body that goes far beyond just a little bit of you know, brain waves and nerve function. So let's assume that you and I both agree on that front. What do I do with that information? I mean, as a biohacker, or just, you know, as someone who has a job and a family and, you know, wants to perform better, what's the so what of all this? Okay, eat more fat.
It's simple. It basically tells you that all the things that you believe about diet, you may have to kind of fall to the side. The single most important thing is make sure you eat healthy fats to make ATP, to unfold your proteins, and drink a lot of water. And guess what? You can probably outlive 90% of the people that are out there. And if you want to maximize it, that's when you get to that pristine state, that's when you can start biohacking from that platform. And I think that's when you can start to see some pretty amazing things being done. I mean, obviously the reason I'm interested in this, and I think probably the reason you're interested in this, we both have jobs that put us at risk because we're in EMF nightmare fields. And oh, yeah. And the thing is, the more we get right means the more we can do wrong. And that may sound crazy to somebody listening to this, but believe me, I know that my day job puts me at significant risk because I'm around, you know, things that steal energy from my body consistently. And I would tell everybody listening to the podcast, in my view, we all live in an environment that is acting to not only take our energy, but also increase our entropy, increase our randomness, and make us more oxidized. And when you get those foundational principles, I think we can teach people how to more chemically reduce their cells so that they can do some of the cooler things, you know, that you and I have both tried, you know, to go above what, you know, the dietary platform allows. Because the dietary platform only provides electrons from food. We don't eat constantly all day. In fact, some of us can only eat once a day. You know, there's other ways for us to get electrons, protons, And the key thing for people to realize is that when you understand how to rebuild your internal biochemistry that works via a quantum fashion, just like semiconductor chips do, that's when people can have amazing results for whatever it is they want to do, whether it's performance athletics or just increasing their wellness quotient or maybe reversing diabetes or Hashimoto's disease.
It's kind of interesting when you talk about adding electrons. I've used ozone therapy extensively, which adds an extra electron all over the body. It's very powerful stuff, specifically to fix my mitochondrial function. I use glutathione and pulsed electromagnetic fields and things like that, partly because I started out from behind, but also because I flew 100 times last year, and I don't remember how many miles, but it was more than 100,000. And that's particularly dangerous. You've got EMFs, you've got ionizing radiation, you've got bad air, you've got flame retardants and all that
stuff. I got some bad news for you, Dave, that you're probably not going to want to hear. In fact, it's ironic that you brought this up, but I think this is something that everybody on the podcast needs to hear, and you do too. Today, the FAA announced that they are going to let people use their cellular devices from gate to gate. And I want to explain to people what that means. That means that everybody in that plane who's in a long metal tube will be turning on Wi-Fi simultaneously. That's 250 people. So the best way I can describe it to you, you are flying for 2 to 6 hours in a microwave oven. And if anybody out there has put a piece of steak in a microwave oven and then cooked it for, say, 2 or 3 minutes, they know that it comes out like shoe leather. That's basically what you're doing to yourself. So I would tell you, Dave, the more you fly, I'll make this prediction on this podcast based on this governmental change, that more business travelers, more businessmen will have more problems sleeping and develop more Neolithic diseases in the next 20 years than just about every other group out there if this law stands. And believe me, the public wants this, but they don't understand why they shouldn't want it.
So Jack, I just checked out that stuff. They're not allowing the cellular phone part of it to be on, just the Wi-Fi. And the Wi-Fi is already allowed, and it has been for the past 5 years or so, onboard Wi-Fi to connect to a cellular radio that's outside the airplane, usually in the nose.
Yeah, but I think the point is, Dave, there's going to be way more people using it. So the capacity issue is the problem.
Got it. Just because there'll be a lot of Wi-Fi signals, not cellular signals.
Correct.
Yeah. So what do you do about that? I'll tell you an experiment, actually. You can laugh at me when we're done, but then I want to know your solution. And I want to know why my experiment failed. That's why I'm telling you about it. I'm familiar with the effects of playing with electrons in the body. So I added a 9-volt battery. And yes, this might have been crazy. I stuck it in my sock with electrically conductive fabric wrapped around it and only one or two alligator clips sticking out. So yeah, it looked a little suspicious, but no one said anything. And I basically kept myself connected to the negative pole of the battery, or maybe it was positive. This was a couple years ago. Whatever I thought was going to allow me to have to not build up a static charge when I was flying. And I felt like crap for 2 weeks afterwards. Like my brain didn't feel like it worked very well. What did I do? What did I do wrong? And what should I do when I'm on an airplane sitting around a bunch of people using Wi-Fi in a long metal tube?
That one's simple. You decreased the DC current in your brain, specifically in the CSF, and you short-circuited your ability. In other words, you changed the density of water in CSF so that it became less dense. When water is less dense, it carries less oxygen. So that's the reason you felt like shit. The simple way to fix the problem is take your shoe off barefoot and put it on the metal stanchion right in front of you. Because remember, here's the good thing about airplanes. Because they have all the avionics in them, they have to be naturally grounded. The problem is you're not grounded to the plane. And if you take your bare foot and put it on the metal stanchion, you become grounded. The other thing that I do is I drink minimum of 32 ounces of freezing cold water before I get on the plane. And I always make sure I have 2 liters of water during the flight. The other thing I'll do is I usually preload with reduced versions of coenzyme Q10. I usually start off with 800 milligrams before I take off. I usually take, depending on the flight, I usually take 200 milligrams for every hour I'm going to be on the flight, and I redose every 2 times because, for those of you who don't know, coenzyme Q10 does 2 things. It helps quantum tunneling in your mitochondria, but the other thing that's probably more important, that it helps the zeta potential in your blood so that you don't clot. And that's why so many people who travel for long periods of time get blood clotting, because it causes something called Rouleau formation around red blood cells. So if you redose with that, that helps. And then when I land, as soon as I land, I go and drink another glass of water afterwards. Usually I'll go to the bathroom quite a bit during this, but I will tell you the other thing too, it helps mitigate the risks of jet lag as well. And if I'm going across time zones, like say if I was going to see Dave in the West Coast, I would probably that night before I went to bed, I would supplement with 6 to 9 milligrams of melatonin just that night. And I tell most of the members on my side, I'm not a fan of using melatonin because it's so important in the circadian signaling in the brain. When you introduce melatonin exogenously, you can really screw things up, especially if you don't know where your adrenal stress index is and your salivary melatonin level. But those are the things that I do when I travel. Like I'm getting ready to go to Europe in about 6 weeks. So what I just told you guys is exactly what my game plan is for me, my wife, and my kids before we do this, because that's an awful long trip.
So why do you take so much? I mean, 6 to 9 milligrams, we only make like 0.3 milligrams naturally. Like
it's not about what you make. It's about what you're losing in the flight. Here's the thing, Dave, when you have to remember, this is something that's actually tied to the EMF field that people don't realize. And I've had this discussion with several of, you know, your friends and my friends on Facebook, but I think it bears importance. People understand that EMF is bad, but what they really don't understand, the higher you go up, the altitude, the worse it is. Because not only are you getting a bigger effect of the EMF, but you're also getting a huge effect from the solar wind, the higher you get up in the atmosphere. And if you happen to, say, be going between, I don't know, British Columbia and Asia, you're flying over the pole, which is even worse. So this can really cause havoc in your red blood cells, where you get oxidized really fast. So if you are constantly replenishing this source, you're not going to burn through your glutathione in other parts of your body. Just remember, energy and reduction in the body is a zero-sum game. We have a huge energy store that we draw upon in times of stress. And I look at an airplane flight stress probably the same way, you know, maybe a triathlete would look at one of their races. So that's the reason why I'm very aggressive.
You and I both look at airplane flights as a significant biological stress. And I take a lot of astaxanthin for the radiation. I prefer idebenone over coenzyme Q10. Why do you not use idebenone?
To be honest with you, it's not something that I've seen make a big difference. Like I'm always, you know how me I am with the drawing my bloods and stuff. Yep. If I do a big flight, like I don't do it for under 3 hours, because under 3 hours, I don't think it makes a big difference. But when you're going to do a flight to Asia or a flight to Europe from the States, that's when it does have a big effect. And I'll usually draw my blood before I go. And if I happen to be flying to a country that I can get an easy blood test, I'll do it. The last time I did this, I actually flew to Germany and actually found, because they had labs there, that I was pretty oxidized. And it was funny. It took me almost 2 or 3 days to get over it. And when I upped my coenzyme Q10, the reduced version, I actually felt better right away. And this is empiric stuff. This is testing over probably 7, 8, 10 years. And I never realized just how bad it was, because I always forgot the altitude effect. And I think if you asked me, you know, as a scientist, I think the altitude plays a far bigger role than we know. And it's the one variable that none of us can control for, because we don't know the flight path unless we're on a private plane. And, you know, I don't fly private. I fly commercial. And I think anytime you go to Europe, especially from the States, you're flying very close to where the magnetosphere of the Earth is not as strong as it could be. The same thing is true when you go to South America. There's a thing called the South Atlantic Anomaly that actually, believe it or not, most commercial airliners will avoid, because they even have problems with their high electrical avionics. So this is not a little thing to joke around about. There's also another one that's off the coast of Australia that causes a huge problem because the magnetic sphere down in the southern hemisphere is not as strong as it is in the northern hemisphere.
Wow. And the health effects of flying through those, I guess you're saying most big airplanes.
Huge.
You're saying, but they don't fly through them anyway because.
No, they don't. Well, I can tell you the South Atlantic anomaly is very well known by commercial airline pilots. I would tell you, Dave, just talk to some of your commercial pilot friends and they will tell you some of the crazier things that have happened when planes go through there. And it's directly tied to not only the electromagnetic field below, but it's really tied to the weird factors that can happen with the solar wind. And, you know, I've talked to, you know, a physicist about this, and I even wrote this in the blog probably 2 months ago, that a guy named Andrew Marino, who's in Robert Becker's lab, testified in New York State under deposition that they have documented proof that an EMF from a local power line that was being built in New York showed distal effects 90,000 miles above the Earth's atmosphere. And when you start to realize the power of electromagnetic, you know, force in biology, I mean, it starts to make you realize that when we leave this planet's surface, we are doing something radical to our biology, far, far more radical than any of us realize.
All right. What about people who live in skyscrapers? I know a lot of them.
Yeah, well, so do I. And one of your friends and my friends on Facebook who runs the Circadian Biohacker site, I've been on his case for 3 years to get off the 17th floor of Brooklyn. And that's the reason why. And here's the other effect that you may not have appreciated, because I just wrote a blog about it today for the first time. And it's something that I probably should have told you even back when we met in Austin, because it ties into the cold theory and everything else. But transition metals are used in all biologic proteins, especially the ones that you talk about on your blog, like iron and zinc and copper. Well, here's what people don't appreciate. All buildings that are skyscrapers, no matter where they are, usually have huge amounts of these transition metals built in their skins and in their skeletons. This draws EMF towards it. And EMF has a very interesting effect. When you are in the microwave range, it absorbs EMF, meaning that below that level, you're okay. And for anybody who thinks this is total bullshit, here's the easy biohack to prove I'm right. Take a piece of metal, put it in your microwave, and turn it on. And you will see electricity, sparks, and nastiness. Well, the same thing happens in our cells, except not with as much, how shall we say, fireworks. But it screws up two things. It screws up any protein that has transition metals in it. And almost every single one of those are tied to energy generation in the body, as well as neurologic transmission, as well as neuroimmunity. But the other big effect that it has, it causes intracellular dehydration, which I told you ties back to that whole story about the quantum cell and Gilbert Ling's work. It has even a huger effect in humans, because we rely on that energy source more so than we do in ATP. And that's part of the reason why, you know, you see some of these guys who are business travelers, you know, will drop dead of a heart attack as soon as they get off the plane, because they have a massive pulmonary embolus because of their blood clots. People don't realize that these effects are out there. And part of the reason why is because no one's really talking about actually how electromagnetic energy changes the structure of matter. And when I say that to people, they look at me like, are you kidding me? And I'm like, no. I mean, all you have to do to think about it is very simple. Every single one of us have two eyeballs in our head. There's a protein in our eye called rhodopsin that allows us all to see. Rhodopsin goes through a primary configurational protein change in about 200, what we call femtoseconds. That's how small it is. And that conformational change allows you to have all the energy you need to see. This is a quantum effect. The same thing happens when we sleep. The same thing happens on our inner mitochondrial membrane when we go through these cytochromes. So if you cannot deliver electrons where it needs to be in the biologic, you know, milieu of life, you are going to pay a biologic toll, whether you know it or not. And I guess a lot of people don't believe, like when I was at Ancestral Health Symposium, I asked probably one of the most famous paleo biochemists, and even wrote a blog post about it, about what is the quantum effect of electron? And the answer that I got from him basically made me realize that they don't have a clue about how physical chemistry is altered by electromagnetic radiation. And there's so many examples. I mean, Dave, in your world, because you live in a technology world, there's now documented proof from MIT researchers that if you take a laser and hit any substance at all, you turn that into a semiconductor. That semiconductor becomes able to polarize water and electrons to move across it. Well, guess what? Maybe people should start to realize why cholesterol molecule is actually a polar molecule. Because when it's energized by photons, electrons, or protons, it becomes polarizable. That means it becomes a semiconductor. Well, let's start talking about why cholesterol is present in just about every cell of the body. It opens up a can of worms that nobody really wants to think about. But I promise you, the studies that have been done on this are huge. The problem is nobody's reading this stuff because it's not published in the biology literature. It's published in the physics literature. I mean, Gilbert Ling is one guy. Mei-Ho Wan, another. Werner Lowenstein. Herbert Froelich. How about Erwin Schrödinger? You know, a famous physicist who wrote a book in 1941 called What is Life? I want people to go back and realize that what I'm saying clearly, whether you think I'm batshit crazy or not, is that physics dictates biology. And until we get that message, none of us are going to do well. And, you know, that's part of the reason why I've always thought you were a kindred spirit, because I love the fact that you biohack yourself, because many of the biohacks that you do are basically taking physics to change your biology. And whether you realize it or not, it's a very cool thing. And I guess I have to be the guy to explain to people how that actually happens.
There's no doubt in my mind, just from my own experience, that when you change the environment around you, whether it's magnetically or electromagnetically, or looking at ions in your environment, looking at the Schumann resonance, all of those things have effects that we're largely unaware of, but they're increasingly becoming measurable effects because of all my quantified self friends, because of the number of sensors and the amount of data that we can look at. I met a guy, in fact, someone I'll introduce you to at the last Quantified Self conference, an engineer, an electrical engineer out of Poland who retired and built an extremely sensitive EMF detector you can hold in your hand. And he's kind of scared himself because he realized that just by thinking, you could change the thing across the room. And
that's
it's repeatable. And so he's actually giving these out to researchers now, saying, well, it looks like I can detect what's happening from solar wind, and there's all these other things that basically no one's ever thought might have biological effects that now we can measure, and you can even draw a 3D picture of them if you have enough compute power. So yeah, we're walking around in a world that looks nothing like what we see with our eyes, and few people know the difference. But what do we do? Like, how do I stay resilient in all this? And this has been my big challenge for the last 10 years. Like, I'm not going to stop flying because I help a lot of people when I fly. I go somewhere, you know, I go on TV, I get on stage, and, you know, I might tell 10,000 people something that, you know, improves the quality of their life. I'm going to keep doing that. So we talked about CoQ10 and all, but all right, do I wear a foil hat? Do I line my house with a metal mesh that blocks EMF? Like, what are the ways to get around the problems we just talked about? Because, like, I'd love to get your take.
It's pretty simple. I mean, and it really comes down to understanding the quantized effect of EMF and matter. And I'll make it simple. You need to become facile with the first and second law of thermodynamics, okay? And I'm not going to go into that here, but I just want to make sure that you understand this. The more we put ourselves at risk, just the way you do in your life and the way I do in my life in the operating room, means we have to do more. And that's what people need to take away from this when they're listening to this. If you have a lifestyle that you're not willing to alter or change, then that means all the crazy biohacks that Dave does and I do, you need to pay deep attention to, because you may need to incorporate those. If you're a guy that lives on the farm in Iowa, no, you probably don't need to do it all. Everything has a context. But I guess my point, Dave, that I'm trying to really get across to people, and I have to go a little bit deeper than most, it's not a macronutrient story. For me, I've got to get people to realize that our tissues are a system of excitable media that we call cells. And our cells are quantized, and therefore that means they're excitable, and it means they're poised to respond specifically and disproportionately to weak, low-frequency electromagnetic signals from our environment. That means that the higher range frequencies can be really problematic. Now, researchers like Becker and Marino have showed that even the low frequency stuff we have to worry about. But anytime we store energy in our body for any reasons at all, our tissues automatically act to amplify and rectify weak electromagnetic signals, which goes back to the story you just told about your friend earlier. And this is part of the reason why I've got to get people to understand what Robert O. Becker found in 1960s has a huge implication for Dave Asprey being able to live the lifestyle he does and for me to do my lifestyle. But it also, Dave, for the random guy listening to this who just wants to get healthy and reverse his type 2 diabetes, he needs to understand that eating fat and drinking good water and minimizing their risk is something that is in the power of every single person listening to this podcast. This is not rocket scientist. It's not mind-bending stuff. It really becomes pretty simple. But the problem is people don't understand why this stuff works. Like, you remember when we first met, you were fascinated by cold thermogenesis. Well, cold thermogenesis, in a nutshell, why does it work? It's simple. It increases semiconductive currents in these excitable media we call cells. That's what CT does. What else does CT do? If you're a physicist, it's simple. When things get cold, it decreases entropy. I just told you before that entropy increases inflammation. Well, okay, there's the link. That's why cold isn't hormetic like some of the paleo biochemists say. Cold is absolutely primordial to a species that requires their excitable media to be filled with energy at all times. And it's really important for people to understand that the things that you and I do, while they may sound very difficult when you try to, assimilate and apply that knowledge, just do it and then see what happens. You know, and I think people will be surprised by that. And I guess the simple message is, if you really want to know how it works, come read my blog and I'll split your head open. But it's not that hard. Just eat fat, a lot of protein, limit your carbs, keep your carbs in season. When the light cycles are long, that's when carbs are fine. If you happen to fly a lot and this and that, then listen to Dave's podcast and maybe ask me questions on my site about how to biohack your lifestyle best, because you know that you have a high-risk lifestyle. I mean, I'm constantly around ionizing radiation every day I'm in the operating room. I'm constantly around blue light. That means that my battle for survival is always about how good or bad my sleep's going to be. And I know that. And I'm willing to walk that walk to do the things I do. Just like you said, Dave, you're willing to do what you do in an airplane to do what you do. And, you know, I applaud you for that. And I understand your modus operandi. But I think where people get into some trouble when they listen to you and they listen to me is they think that we're saying that everybody needs to do what we do in terms of the lengths that we do. I don't think that's true. I think, though, that you have to put your personal risk in terms of how bad or good your environment is and then apply that and see how you do. Now, if you happen to be sick, then I think that changes the metrics of the game a bit. And then I think you do need to really, you know, use a quantified self platform, using labs, and doing some of the really cool stuff that you've talked about and some of the things that I've talked about. Then I think you can have a major impact. If anybody didn't hear me clearly, if you think that just eating a paleo diet or an epi-paleo diet or a bulletproof diet is going to completely reverse your problems, you are completely mistaken.
Yeah, it's going to move your needle in the right direction, but it's not going to solve
everything. Exactly correct, Dave. And, you know, that's one of the things that, you know, when you first met me at PaleoFX, what did I say that made me so controversial in paleo? It was simple. I was like, paleo is a step in the right direction, but that's all it's doing. It's moving your needle in the right direction. It's not the be-all, end-all. And the reason why is it's not just biochemistry. People don't understand how the quantum world directly affects chemistry. And I mean, eyesight does it, you know, inner mitochondrial membrane does it.
I think actually what you said at PaleoFX that was controversial wasn't that. It was that you looked at everyone and said, all of you who are doing CrossFit are going to die sooner because you're overtraining. And I think that might have been the controversy.
I'm going to tell you why I said that, though, because you see, I didn't laugh with the joke because I still believe that's true.
I do, too. If you're working out hard and heavy every day, it's too much. I see it in my clients all the time.
Well, the bigger problem is all these kids are using excessive amounts of EMF on top of it. So what does that mean for the glutathione? It's rock bottom. I mean, how many people, Dave, did you and I see at PaleoFX? They look like Adonis on the outside, and yet they couldn't sleep. They felt like crap. And see, that's the point that I'm trying to make to people. When, you know, you go to most of these paleo sites, they tell you, oh, just eat more carbs and do more burpees and you'll be fine. That's not good information, because if these kids continue to do what they're doing, they are going to wind up trashing their telomeres, trashing their stem cells, and then when they're 50 years old, having knee replacements, joint replacements, and all kinds of other things go on. I don't want to see that happen to them.
I'm a fan of the high intensity, but you've got to look at rest and recovery, and whether the high intensity is a high intense travel schedule, a high intense surgery schedule, or right. Whatever else you've got. Like, stress is stress, and if you're adding more for no reason, but you said something, I want to make sure we get to that in the time we've got, about what's going to happen when you're 40 or 50. You also have said that almost all women need to be on some kind of bioidentical hormone replacement regimen. And
yes.
I know that women over 40 have the hardest time losing weight on the Bulletproof diet, the Epipaleo diet, or any other diet. Like, they tend to work harder compared to guys who can lose weight quickly. Why is it that women have a harder time losing weight when they're older? Why do you recommend bioidentical hormone replacement for women more than for men?
Well, I mean, this is a very complex issue, but I'm going to discuss it. But I do want to tell you that I recently wrote a blog post that I think directly hits this issue. And I believe it was called Energy and Epigenetics 7. And there's a whole section in there about menopause and women and why it's a big deal. This is basically what it comes down to. Women are designed by evolution to pass the signals from our environment to our offspring. So that means by evolutionary design, they're more sensitive to electromagnetic signals. And the way they do that is they have less myelin. When you're less myelinated, you pick up more EMF. And that signal goes to the egg that eventually becomes the child. So how does that happen in a woman? Well, it happens very simply. Estrogen blocks the gut absorption of iodine. Iodine is a critical portion of myelination in a human. So what's the main difference between a primate and a human? Very simply, a primate is born with its brain 90% fully formed, and the chimp is razor thin, has no fat. Everybody on this planet knows that a human baby is born, it can't walk, it can't talk, it can't do anything, and it's got a bunch of sub-Q fat. How do you form myelin? Myelinogenesis in humans is simple. It requires ketosis, iodine, and breastfeeding. So when you think about women, they stay this way all the way until they get to menopause. What happens at menopause? They lose their estrogen because their ovaries die. Why, in my belief, do women go through menopause? It's to recapture their longevity. Because when they go through menopause, they need to become ketotic, because estrogen falls, they're allowed to absorb iodine. This allows them to myelinate. Many of the symptoms that are associated with menopause, if you look at it, are associated with the same things we see when uncoupling proteins become active. You know, and I talk about this, you know, big time in that blog. I even make a model of it using cystic fibrosis, you know, in breast cancer. It's a huge, huge issue. The reason why women tend to get fatter when they go through menopause, because they believe the things that most other people in the Western world believe that they should eat a balanced Western diet. Well, these women need to be more ketotic at that time. And if they do that and they have higher levels of ATP, stay in ketosis and actually eat a lot of shellfish, they won't get fat. And I would tell your podcast listeners, if you think that's total bullshit, you can come on my forum and start talking to some of the people who've done this. I mean, just about most of the people in my family have done this. There's the key factor with women in menopause is that they just have too low levels of progesterone. And the reason why is progesterone is vitally important in terms of keeping water inside. What did I say before when we were talking about the quantum cell theory that I'm getting ready to launch? Water is incredibly important for energy transfers, just like it is when you grow your lawn or your trees. But the problem is people don't realize women have run at an energy deficit from the time they had their period until the time it went away. This is nature's way of reclaiming that energy. And that's why their progesterone estradiol ratio should be upside down. And when I hear women, you know, being supplemented on transdermal estrogen and or estrogen pills, my hair wants to fall out because they're doing exactly the wrong thing. If they're going to use estrogen, use it transvaginally or transrectally. But the best thing to do is you got to replace your progesterone. And you got to eat ketotic. When you do that, women, you will light your world on fire. And, you know, this is one of my big beefs with my own profession. Several of the anti-aging doctors that I've worked with and actually trained with, they get this message, but not all of them do. I would say 90% of people you'll pay good money to will put people on boatloads of estrogen, and that's the wrong thing to do. And that's part of the reason why I wrote the Energy and Epigenetics 7 blog post. And I mean, there's a whole section in there about iodine and ketosis and postmenopausal women. And the disease that I use for people to understand this is actually ironically a genetic one, which is cystic fibrosis. Because these people have a genetic problem that doesn't allow them to allow iodine across their basement membrane. And what do you know about people who have cystic fibrosis? None of them can make mucus. They all have altered immune systems and they tend to die early. Well, guess what? If you want to die early, just take estrogen through the roof through your whole life, and that's your guarantee to get it. That's part of the reason why women who get high levels of breast cancer have high levels of estrogen. Estrogen is pro-growth, and progesterone turns off that growth. And it's vitally important that that kind of information gets out. And I hate to say this, you can't rely on the docs because many of the doctors don't understand this nuance because it's not taught in medical school. It's not taught in residency. It's something that you actually have to go back and read the books yourself to realize where these effects are. And that's part of the reason why I use the chimp birth and the human birth to explain to people. I said, guys, look at how a chimp comes into the world and look at how we come into the world. What's the main difference? It's the brain. And the brain myelinates in humans from 0 years old to 25 years old. That's part of the reason why a kid in North America can't rent a hotel room and can't rent a car, because they're more impulsive the less myelinated they are. And, you know, this gets into other diseases that people know that have myelin problems like multiple sclerosis. Well, there's a lot of keys to fixing your myelin problem, but I got news for you. You need to understand the primordial things that happen in a child. What does a child do when it myelinates? Simple. It's designed to suckle on its mother's breast that's loaded with fat and protein. It's designed to take its sub-Q fat and use it to be ketotic. It's designed to get a ton of iodine from its mother. What happens in 6 months? It regenerates its own immune system and it grows its brain. And that's exactly what you're trying to do, you know, when you're a postmenopausal woman. It's no different. And people forget that there's a lot of homology between that. Everybody knows what happens when a child's born. You know, that's not a mystery to anybody. You know, that doesn't make me controversial. The problem is people are not taking that example and using it in a disease state or, say, even a state where you're trying to figure out, well, why am I breaking down too early? If you really want to go deeper here, Dave, Robert O. Becker found that the DC current that regenerates tissues in all mammals is below the myelin level. Guess what he also found? When myelin's decreased, the DC current decreases. So what does that mean? If you're demyelinating for any reason at all, you cannot regenerate your own tissues. That's part of the reason why diabetics don't heal well, because they all have myelination problems. That's what peripheral neuropathy is at its core issue. And people don't seem to understand that.
So when we go down, I mean, that's a lot of info there. And I'm trying to translate that into specific steps that women can take, or men. One of them, obviously, is iodine supplementation. I've done as high as 12.5 milligrams a day, and I'd recommend at least 500 micrograms for people. And I know getting it from shellfish, if they actually have iodine in them, which they probably do, but you don't know how much. What's your take on iodine? What form? Transdermal? Oral? How often? How much?
So I'm not a big fan of supplements for iodine. I tell people raw oysters 3 times a week is fine. In fact, this is something that I told people on my forum, and you may appreciate hearing it. One raw oyster has the same nutrient density as a pound of grass-fed liver. Think about that for a minute. I think people need to understand that the brain-specific nutrients that are in an oyster are phenomenal. There is nothing more nutritious on this planet than a raw oyster. And you can look at any USDA nutrition site and find that that's absolutely accurate. So if you're going to supplement, I think using seaweeds are okay. I wrote a blog post called Brain Gut 6, and it's also in my book, where I break down all the different seaweeds. The number one seaweed that has the most iodine in it is arami. Some people like it, some people don't. But, you know, you can use seaweeds in your bone broths. When you do that, that's kind of how I do it. But I eat a ton of oysters, as you know, and I happen to live in an area where I can get oysters. So for me, iodine's never a problem. But for most people, it is a problem. And here's another good thing about iodine that people may not know. The second best food to replenish iodine happens to be pastured eggs.
I definitely think oysters are good, but you know, my bag of raw oysters spoils when I'm on an airplane and traveling, and you know, raw oysters are not something that most people can consume every day. So what would the rest of us do?
Well, I think that the rest of people can use the seaweeds. Seaweeds would be good. Arami is probably the best one that has the most iodine in it.
And the reason that that's better than, you know, 12.5 milligram Lugol's is what?
Well, because it's coming in its biologic package. And that's the reason why. I mean, I always tell people that when you understand the issue we talked about earlier with myelinogenesis, that there's many cofactors that go into it. So you want to eat the food that has the evolutionary biologic package and not one or the other. We even talked about that earlier about kelp, krill. Why krill oil by itself, it doesn't have all the necessary brain-specific nutrients tied to it. So if you take it in excess, it can be a problem.
Jack, we're coming up on the end of the show. I'd like to ask you a question that I've asked every guest. What are the top 3 things that you'd recommend people do if they want to perform better? This doesn't have to be epipaleo or anything else, just from your entire life experience, 3 most important things to increase human performance and resilience. Lay them out.
Number 1, drink reverse osmosis water. Number 2, go to the library and buy Gilbert Ling's book. Buy Andrew Marino's book, and buy everything that Robert O. Becker ever wrote. Read it, because the most important thing for you improving your performance is upgrading the hardware in your brain by putting new software in it.
I love it, and a double plus vote on that Robert O. Becker. I've read all of his stuff about 15 years ago, and a lot of my biohacking has been informed by the knowledge that's in there. Definitely a luminary. So thanks for that. I will include links to all of these books on the Bulletproof show notes when we put this out on bulletproofexec.com. Jack, I'll also include links to your site. Why don't you tell people the name of your book, where they can find it on Amazon, etc., and the name of your blog. So I can also include those in the show notes.
Yeah, my blog site is www.jackcruse.com. And the book is called The Epipaleo Prescription, and you can find it on Amazon, Barnes and Nobles, and I think just about every site out there. We also sell it on the forum. If you want to come to the forum, you can get it in the EpiPaleo store. And if you buy the book and you want me to write something in it, just drop me a line on the on my form that I have there, and I'd be more than happy to do that for you.
Jack, thanks a ton for coming on the show. It's great to catch up, and I look forward to having you back on, hopefully sometime when we have a little bit more bandwidth so we can have simultaneous video. That'd be great.
All right. Take care, Dave. It was great talking with you.
If you haven't had a chance to check out our upgraded aging formula, it's worth a look. It's an amazing molecule you can take that helps you to mimic the effects of caloric restriction. You're probably already practicing bulletproof intermittent fasting. Adding something like upgraded aging formula helps your body to get the benefits of reducing calories without actually reducing calories. On top of that, upgraded aging formula helps your brain deal with large levels of glutamate, which is something that causes toxicity in the brain. So it helps a healthy brain stay healthy. It also has other very positive effects on maintaining healthy blood sugar levels and on other aging risk factors. This was the only supplement I've ever come across that very clearly impacts four different facets of aging. That's why I call it Upgraded Aging Formula, and it's available on upgradedself.com.